Brand new week, back with you Monday style, July 31st, 2023. Wrapping up another month right here on Connecticut Today. We featured Connecticut News Junkie columnist Terry Cowgill's thoughts on term limits for members of Congress. Motor Transport Association of Connecticut President John Blair talked about a growing controversy surrounding a new highway user fee. And I had a few thoughts to kick off the show on former President Trump's 2024 poll numbers. Our Monday Spotlight, 5 o'clock, Terry Cowgill. You can read him in a couple of places, ctnewsjunkie.com, and also at substack.com. Check him out. His regular musings at Substack, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Mr. Cowgill, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Yes, good afternoon, Paul. Doing very well, thank you. Avoiding the rainstorm coming my way.
Nice. How is it up in the, is the quiet corner, Terry? Is it still quiet? Is it always quiet up there? No?
No, the northeast corner is the quiet corner.
Oh!
We're the corner with all the New Yorkers.
Oh, okay. with all the quiet big money, not like the loud big money in Fairfield County, right? All the quiet big money.
That's right. We have a mix of old and new money, so it's, it's a clash of cultures. Yeah.
Nice. Terry, you let me know before you came on today. I guess you, like me, have been ping-ponging over the years about perhaps term limits, but man, what we've seen recently, I'm back on board with this, Terry. I don't know how you feel, but man, oh man, what we've seen recently really at least has made me rethink this.
Yeah, I have been long opposed to term limits on the grounds that it's incompatible with a free society. We want to give people choices. And if people want to elect people to Congress and the Senate and the House over and over again until they're 100 years old, like Strom Thurmond was, then they should be free to do that if that's what they want to do. But we have now such an amazing number of people, older folks in Congress who have health problems. And we also have, of course, the likely candidates for president for next year. One is President Biden, who is currently 80, I believe. Mm-hmm. Former President Donald Trump is 77. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because everybody heard about that incident involving Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, who froze on the camera about 20 seconds before his aides and other senators, grabbed his elbows and asked him what was wrong with him. He has suffered a series of falls, and he's not all there anymore, which is really too bad because he was a very smart guy in his prime. But that got me to thinking, what's the history behind all of this stuff? And of course, we've never had any age limits or any mental acuity tests or anything like that. I would not be for that, but I am for limiting terms now. And but there's a disadvantage, to limiting terms, and maybe this is why you didn't like it, Paul, if you limit the terms that people can serve in the Senate and the House, it makes their staffers all the more important because they're going to be the ones with the institutional knowledge.
Mm.
And if you're concerned about the administrative state and, all of that stuff, it will probably strengthen the administrative state, ironically. But, yes, I am for it. I think we've got enough, and I certainly listed it in my Substack column, all the different ones to Charles Grassley, senator from Iowa, turns 90 in September. He was just reelected last year to another 6-year term. He's chair of the Senate Finance or Budget Committee. Amazing.
and Terry, you sadly had the episode last week with Dianne Feinstein where they basically told her what to say. Now, it was a procedural vote. I understand that on some sort of budget thing or innocuous thing, but it was sad to see her there kind of just lost. I mean, she is taking up a seat in the most exclusive deliberative body in the history of man, the United States Senate. And, if she were to step aside, Gavin Newsom, being a Democrat, would appoint a Democratic placeholder. But, Terry, I don't know about you. If I ever got to that age, and I said it earlier in the show, I would have left a long time before that. But I guess the power and the prestige is just intoxicating, I guess.
I think it is. I think those jobs do become intoxicating and addictive because, you know, and especially if you're somebody like Grassley or Feinstein, who've been doing it for so long, it's like your entire life. So if you stop doing this job, what are you going to do with yourself? Your life loses meaning. And a lot of these people, their identities are so closely tied to these jobs. And let's face it, they're good jobs. They pay about $200,000 a year. Mm-hmm. You get travel expenses, housing allowances. You fly all over the place. You get treated like royalty just about wherever you go. And they're very difficult jobs to give up. And I'm finally to the point now where I'm saying, no, we do need limits. Did you know this is a fact that I brought up? Your listeners might find amusing, but Google searches for the word gerontocracy skyrocketed after Mitch McConnell's episode.
Really?
So,
wow.
Yeah. That tells you, you know, what people are thinking about this, because we're getting to the point where it really is going to be ruled by old people. And when I talk about old people, these are people who are older than me. I'm 66. These are people who are like, in some cases, 20, 25 years older than me. Even.
And you're like me, Terry, going, and I'm 62, and I'm going, okay, and so if I went to the Senate right now and I served 20 years, another generation in American time, I would still be 8 years younger than Dianne Feinstein.
That's right, yeah. And you know, Chuck Grassley,
yeah.
He was first elected to the Iowa House of Representatives in 1959,
wow.
When I was two.
Terry Cowgill is the guest. Now, Terry also blogs for the Connecticut News Junkie, and this story is fascinating, Terry, and I know you've been looking for that Tesla Model X, so now apparently instead of going to White Plains like a lot of people in Connecticut do, it turns out one of our Native American tribes wants to help out Elon Musk here in some way.
Yeah, isn't that great? You know, I look at this and I look at the story and I'm thinking to myself, the government thinks it's so smart they figure, well, we'll just ban things or we'll just keep these bans in place.
Mm-hmm.
And private industry, I mean, the private sector, if they can find a way around it, they're smart enough to do it. And Elon Musk and Tesla have done this because in Connecticut, unlike New York and Massachusetts, automakers may not sell their vehicles directly to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be done through a middleman known as a licensed dealership. And any attempt to sell directly to consumers is forbidden. So, and this is, of course, a protection racket for the auto dealers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying they're bad people or anything, but they're middlemen. And, anytime you're a middleman, there's going to come a time probably when you're not necessary anymore.
Yeah.
And in this case, I really think that I'd love to see the law change. That's been proposed a couple of times, but it always dies because the just like the package store owners, when you try to change the rules there, the auto dealers go apoplectic and they say this is anti-consumer. It's going to be the end of the automotive world as we know it. But in this case, I think it's great that they're going to tribal land, and it'll be interesting to see whether the auto dealers actually, file suit on the grounds that this is a law that even the tribes have to obey, even if it's on sovereign land. So this will be very interesting to follow.
So the next time I go to the Mohegan Sun Arena, maybe for a concert, or I go to Foxwoods to go to the Fox Theater, I'll call you, Terry. I'll let you know if I pass the Tesla dealership as I walk in there. I guess that's how they're going to do it, right? It's on tribal land. So, man, think of it. Yeah. And Terry, think about the marketing incentives. Hey, buy the Tesla here and you get a couple of free nights up in the hotel. Well, what's better than that, right?
The possibilities are endless. And, and I think that's probably one of the reasons Mohegan Sun likes this idea of having the Tesla showroom there, because, there's going to be a lot of people maybe who will come to buy a Tesla who might say to themselves, hey, I'm not a gambler, but maybe I'd like to go to this show at Mohegan Sun. Maybe I'd like to go to one of the restaurants, or they basically have a shopping mall in both of those casinos now.
Yeah.
You know, go around and do a little shopping or whatever. And I think it's a very good deal for both of them. But the real problem is they have to reform the law so that this middleman isn't required for the sale of new vehicles. It's not required, of course, for used vehicles, because, I mean, you and I can sell our cars. We can put an ad on Craigslist, and somebody can come to our house, and if they like it, they can buy it. But new vehicles must be sold through a dealership.
Yeah. So, Terry, the next logical step is tell Christine Stewart and all the folks there at the News Junkie that you probably have to go out to the casinos for like a week and research this. So a few days at least, you know, surveying the mall, some nice meal. And you're strictly out there to observe, Terry. It's a reporting expense.
Right.
You got that, right?
They'll have to set up a new expense account just for me, you know, and it'll have my name on it, and it'll be terrific. It'll be a great time, one of those junkets, but it'll be very fruitful because I'm sure I would get lots of useful information from everybody I talk to.
Absolutely. I like the way you think. So Terry's column about buying now on tribal land, a Tesla coming up this Wednesday, and check out his column with some good thoughts on Substack about maybe it's time again for the vaunted subject of term limits. Substack's the place and red meat for mushy moderates. Terry Cowgill, good to speak with you again. Have a great week.
All right, good to talk to you too, Paul.
Thanks, take care. All right, there you go. So how about that, huh? How about that? There is going to be a Tesla dealership at Mohegan Sun, a direct sales location. It's not a dealership. And it's tough for people to sometimes understand this. You know what the traditional dealer is. Hey, how you doing? Can I help you? Oh, I can tell you want to buy a new car. See, Tesla doesn't want to do that. Now, you may have heard about this, and we talked about this when it was passed months ago, the highway user fee. And this was kind of a little nugget passed by the General Assembly because they knew that too many heads would have rolled politically if we actually went with the tolls here. But apparently there are problems here, and a lot of the folks who were against this are saying, well, see, we told you so, that this wouldn't work. And joining us right now is John Blair. John heads the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut, an association that looks out for the trucking industry in the state. We've had those folks on for a long time now on this show. Hey, John, it's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate you calling me up.
Well, thank you, John. Appreciate that. When I saw you quoted about this, I wanted to get your point of view. So, John, before we get into the we told you so about this, explain to my listeners who may not understand, how did we get here? What is this fee? How does it affect the trucking industry?
Yeah, I think you set it up pretty well. In 2017, Governor Lamont was dead set on having a truck toll, a truck-only toll. He likened it to Rhode Island, who had a truck toll at the time. And as we know, he pushed for an entire tolling system that went from motorcycles all the way up to the largest trucks we had. That did not pass, as we recall. I think it was an embarrassment in some aspects. And so you fast forward to about 2021, right, in the middle of the pandemic and the last night of the session, legislative session, a bill was passed that included a highway use fee. It was done quietly at night, and not many people understood what it did. It got passed, and it essentially sets a tax on trucks that are the largest trucks in the state that are tractor trailers. And any tax we get, we pass on to consumers. So unfortunately, it doesn't sit with us. It hurts consumers the most.
So John, how is that supposed to work? And I know one criticism of this, John, as you bring out the article here and others have, is the reporting of this, the revenue. And I guess you folks in the business have said, hey, just look at other states. This is kind of a weird thing. So what are the mechanics here? How does this work?
Okay, the way it works, let's say you own your own trucking company, right, and you got five trucks, to keep it simple for us.
Mm-hmm.
For the truck, basically what we are going to do is we're going to track the truck because it's a large truck. We're going to track, it has to be a certain type of weight, and if it's a certain type of weight and it's a certain type of truck, you pay per mile a tax. So the heavier the truck, the heavier the tax.
Okay.
Okay. And so the tax is paid. But what happens and doesn't happen today in these companies, they wouldn't, before this tax passed, they wouldn't have to track their mileage. They wouldn't have to track the weight of their truck throughout the day and then pay a tax. None of that existed. They paid a tax maybe, but they didn't have the other elements. What's become very cumbersome for any carrier is tracking the miles throughout the month that they got a report on, or tracking, the weight of the truck. When it leaves the yard, it's a certain weight. It gets to a spot, drops off a certain amount of weight. They have to recalculate that weight, and that number's got to be submitted to the state at the end of the month. And you can imagine for 5 to 50 trucks, that becomes a huge administrative burden. And that administrative burden is about $150,000 to $200,000 per company of 25 trucks.
Wow. So wait a minute. I want to make sure people heard that. So just to comply with the tax is a six-figure situation here?
Yep. For if you have up to 25 to 50 trucks, it costs us between $150,000 to $200,000 to comply with the law.
John,
so you can imagine that burden coming on to us, right?
Sure. A couple more minutes here with the head of the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut, John Blair. And now there's controversy over this highway user fee, which the state says has so far garnered just a hair under $24 million bucks. But a lot of truckers, a lot of companies, according to what our guest says, revenue generation here and the recording of mileage and everything else is tough to do. It's just scattershot. And now there is a push, I guess, John, to revoke this thing or roll it back. But I guess like everything else, there are opponents and proponents on this in Hartford. What are you hearing on that?
Yeah, the Democrats don't want to revisit this issue. Senator Duff made it clear in the article that most recently was put out, and I made statements about repealing the law. He said, I don't think that would be wise to bring it back. Here's the thing. The reason why I asked for it to be repealed, and I'm not looking for a full repeal, I'm looking for a repeal and replace. 21 other states have revoked this law after it had been implemented because of the administrative burden that we spoke about earlier, because you also have because you have a difficult time collecting from the out-of-state carriers. So what happens is this methodology of collecting a highway use fee, it lands on the laps of those that live in the state of Connecticut already paying taxes here. The carriers from outside the state are just driving through the state not paying the tax. And that's why you see half of the revenue generated. You see 25 as opposed to 50,000 as they predicted. And so my request to them is, look, let's do what the other states did that failed. They moved on to a different system that tacked on, monies to your registration or to your property tax. And by doing so, if you hit the property tax of these carriers, you collect the out-of-state as well as the in-state without any issue.
So, John, if you're an out-of-state trucker, let's say you have a load coming up I-95 and you cross the state line, New York, Westchester into Greenwich, and then you go up 91 and Hartford and Enfield and you cross the state line into Massachusetts, how is an out-of-state trucker and or his or her company, how are they supposed to record that and pay that, if any way? How would that work?
They would track what they're supposed to be doing is when they come into the state, they're supposed to track their miles in the state at whatever weight they're at and then pay the tax on that, just like the in-state providers. We drive around the state. We're paying wherever we drive to all day long. At the end of the month, you calculate how many of your trucks from Ohio came through the state of Connecticut, and then you'd pay your tax based on that. The problem is they're not domiciled here, so there are a lot of them that are unlikely to register and pay for that tax.
And then let me ask a dumb question from a guy whose top experience with a truck was when I had my Tonka trucks, John. tearing up my mother's flower beds and her yelling at me. But okay, I'm driving in Connecticut and I have a load whatever the gross weight is that I'm carrying around, right? And then I make a delivery, and then my rig is 500 pounds lighter, and then I make another delivery for another 800 or 1,000 pounds. I mean, are they supposed to then figure all that out if they're not shooting straight
on the
through?
Road. Yeah. Yeah, on the road, they're supposed to figure that out. That's why this has failed, and you hit it. This is why it's failed in 21 states. It doesn't make sense to do it this way. And as I said, the evasion rate of the out-of-staters in New York, and New York's had a program for 7 years to 10 years, there's still an evasion of 50% of out-of-state truckers that don't pay the tax in New York. So it's going to happen here. It's unfair.
So, John, what do you say to people who may be listening now and saying, okay, I get this trucking guy, he's looking out for his clients, I understand, but you know, those trucks do have heavy loads, they do some wear and tear, I don't want to say damage right. to the roads, but so what's the answer, Mr. Trucking Guy, they're probably asking you right now, what would you say?
Hey, we'll pay our fair share to help, you know, take care of the roads here in Connecticut. We aren't saying that we are unwilling to pay that. What we are saying is that if we're going to pay it, again, others should be paying it. Make sure the out-of-staters are paying it. We do think that you should probably, every car does some damage to the road. Electric vehicles are much heavier than normal vehicles. They should probably pay their fair share. So I think it's a bigger collective thing that more should have to pay if we're going to take care of our roads in the right way. We would have to pay on a larger scale because we're heavier. I get that. But I think that that's the solution, is that we all chip in to help out and make sure our roads are good.
All right, John Blair from the Motor Transport Association of Connecticut. John, good to speak with you. We'll chat down the road and see if this comes up again. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you for your time, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right, there's John Blair. I believe their website is mtac.us, M-T as in Tom, AC.us. Man, you can see how that would be. I don't want to say people are, or trucking companies are not honorable or not honest. But how do you do that? Okay, I cross the state line and my weight is here. Then I have to deduct that weight, two more stops, and I'm in Massachusetts. So do they know the exact weight of this stuff? And again, the basis of the argument that he is making in the trucking industry, the basis of the argument they're making is a bunch of states got rid of this because they warned their own lawmakers that it was unworkable. And apparently it turned out that way. Sometimes, folks, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes lawmakers should listen to the people who would be affected by what they do. And get off your high horses in Hartford and in D.C. and listen to the people who say, hey, we see what you're trying to do here. This is a bad idea. We'll tell you why. How about that? I am I'm starting to hope, and this, I may change this as time goes on. I don't know. But on this final day of July, on this Monday, July the 31st, 2023. And by the way, how are you? Hope your weekend was well. I'm starting to hope that if, in fact, Donald Trump is the nominee for the Republicans next time around, and if he loses, now if he wins, that's a completely different story, and I think that says more about the Democratic Party than the Republicans, but allow me to say that, and this is only my opinion, and call me and argue with me on this. I'd love to hear from you at 333-9422, 333-WICC. I'm starting to hope that if Mr. Trump is the nominee and he loses, I'm starting to hope that that loss, if it happens, and I think it would happen, but right now we don't really know. It's a year and change out. A lot could change here. But I really think here that if the GOP is going to lose in the next cycle in 2024, from the White House all the way down to the legislative offices in the state, I'm starting to hope that it is an ass-kicking of epic proportions. I mean, I want the Republican Party, if they're going to lose, now if they win, they win, and even a win by one vote is a win. But if they lose, I hope the national and statewide GOP and even the local officials get their rear ends handed to them like all get out. I mean, I want to see a post game the next day when a year from this November, when God willing, Lisa and Melissa and I are all here. And I want, if we're going to lose, just judging, as I say, we as a registered Republican, if we're going to lose, I want to have to be able to come on here and go, oof, yikes, that left a mark, huh? Because I see new poll numbers out here, which, and again, I know you shouldn't overreact to polls. I get it. And it's still relatively early, although the first Republican presidential debate is only about 3 weeks away. It's August 23rd, I think, in Milwaukee, sponsored by Fox. And I'm seeing these poll numbers today, and I'm wondering on top of wondering and on top of wondering what the Republican base is seeing here. Now, you may sit back and say, well, it's so far away, and this is just the national thing. No. You seem to not grasp a fact here that there is what's called now a trickle-down effect, or what they call the down ballot. You know, everything below a certain level, right? Two words, Leora Levy. Okay, that's all you have to say to this. Again, not in any way criticizing Mrs. Levy for her personal traits or her personal life or what she's done for the state GOP, but she joined herself at the rhetorical and electoral hip with Donald Trump last time in a blue state in a shot where maybe, or in a race where maybe a moderate Republican, that Ms. Claritas, might have had a shot against Richard Blumenthal. Let me see what happened. And I can't stop but wonder, and I might be wrong here, and I hope I am, but is the entire, I shouldn't say the entire Republican base in this country, but is it now a kamikaze mission? You know what I mean? I mean, does it have to be Trump? Because if it isn't, we're just going to crash the party. And I say that, and maybe that's the best thing. Maybe, you know, like in sports now, we're talking about, you know, teams in Major League Baseball as the trade deadline is tomorrow afternoon. You know, teams in the NFL do this, and the NHL, and the NBA. Hey, do we just burn it down? Do we just strip it all away and start over again? Why am I asking that? Because according to a new poll from the New York Times and Siena College in New York, Donald Trump leads Ron DeSantis 54-17%. Now, I think the Trump number is a little exaggerated because this is a poll of registered voters, not likely voters. The best screen is likely voters, not registered voters. But even if that's 4 or 5 points off, 54-17. And this guy has got just numerous. I mean, we're talking another indictment coming down, possibly from Georgia this week on a RICO statute. His head maintenance guy has been indicted now. And I know everybody's saying, this is all garbage. It can't all be garbage. It can't. Some of it may be. But these indictments are sometimes built on grand jury testimony. What, all of a sudden everybody's going to lie to a grand jury when they say, hey, by the way, if you lie here, that's perjury. You could go to jail. Oh, yeah, I'm going to perjure myself. What hand do I raise? Right hand up? Do you swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth? So help you God, yeah. Okay, I'm going to lie. Send me to jail. Who does that? The Republican voter base now is so angry that they're about to put their lock, stock, and barrel support again behind a guy who has no discipline. It's not that he doesn't have talents. It's not that he doesn't have a technique that got him a win once. It's not that he's not an interesting speaker. It's not that he doesn't have his finger on the pulse of something, but he is incredibly undisciplined. Did you see that story over the weekend? They went out and they polled. Somebody did. It was a wire service or somebody. They got a hold of, or they polled in some way, 44 people who work with Mr. Trump from 2016 to 2020, you know, in his close, you know, stead there. And out of the 44, they either spoke to them or look at public statements they had made. Only 4 out of the 44 people they spoke to is supporting Donald Trump again. These are people that worked with him. These aren't people on the street. This isn't some gas station attendant somewhere. This isn't some guy, you know, slinging hash at a mom and pop grease pit down the corner. These are 44 people who had some pretty close contact with him on a regular basis, and the score is 40-4 against when they were asked or their statements were analyzed as to whether or not they support him again. But, man, the Republican base is so angry. And, yeah, I understand they're angry at the Democrats. They're angry at the Russia thing. They're angry at the Ukraine thing. Problem is, and if you're angry out there, and if you're still on the Trump train, and you may win, if he wins, more power to him, God bless him. But if he loses, watch out. But here's the thing. Who should you be angry at? Because I kept saying, I was doing shows in other parts of the state, and when he was elected, I said, hey, this guy had better develop some discipline here. Because all this, we're going to drain. That was another thing. We're going to drain the swamp. You can't drain the swamp. You drain the swamp, Washington shuts down. Nothing happens. Nothing gets done. So Donald Trump leads Ron DeSantis 54-17. Are you kidding me? And this is, again, I'm not surprised by this. Republican voters at least 65 years old, Ron DeSantis only gets 9% report. You got a lot of old, cranky, angry Republicans on there who can't let go of the Trump flotilla. You can't. Republican voters still showed overwhelming support for Mr. Trump when all other GOP candidates were eliminated in a hypothetical one-on-one matchup with DeSantis. Donald Trump earned 62% of the vote compared to Ron DeSantis's 31% of the vote. Here, let's do a little exercise here. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. What do you think is going to change if Donald Trump is reelected again? And again, I might be completely wrong here, but in what clear manner of thought is reelecting a guy who would be 78, who already has thousands of enemies in D.C., what is that exactly going to do to advance the country? You tell me, because I can't figure it out. Well, he's going to do this and that. He can't do squat unless he has a 2/3 majority in the Senate. Got to be 2/3. Can't be just one or two votes. You know how the filibuster works. And good for that. I like the filibuster. And you need a majority in the House. This notion of reelecting him, at least at this point, and I may be completely wrong on this, and, you know, if I looked at this number and instead of it being, you know, 54-17, is that what it is? Let me 54-17. I would say, okay, if it's 45-25 or 45-30, I'd say, well, okay, but this is a kamikaze mission. This is a suicide mission. Vote with your head and not with your anger.